I ended up reaching out to his family, and they said, "Who are you? Why now?" And I explained I felt that I had done them an injustice and not really having looked at their son's case adequately, and they were open to having me look, and I did. And when I got there, there was this amazing woman that I met, and that was Milo's grandmother, and her name's Donna, and she sat through this interview with her two daughters, Milo's mom and Milo's aunt, letting them do all the talking, and Donna would just sit. She just sat and stared at me, and was watching me do my work, and I think I could tell she was kind of sizing me up, and she finally, near the end of the discussion, she said something, and it was just this exactly perfect, insightful thing to say at the moment, and I could tell that, you know, she was somebody who had a lot of wisdom, and I watched how her daughters treated her, and when she spoke, everything stopped. There was respect, and it really touched me that this was something different. And I went to the police, who I have a very good working relationship with, based on, you know, that wonderful art that reporters get to do, where you get pulled into a culture that's not yours, and you learn all about it, and you have the secret history and the secret knowledge, and then you learn how to balance where you don't end up being part of them because they don't respect that, but enough to really understand them and basically play with the issues that they're playing with and help other people understand them. And I went to them and I said, "Hey, you know, I'm looking into this case." And I ended up running into a situation where I got called, summoned to an interview, and I walked in and there were seven of them. And I kind of felt like Milo for a moment, you know, outnumbered. And I basically got told, "Don't look here." That was essentially the message. There's nothing to see here. Move along. And that was the wrong thing for them to do, because at that moment, it was like, yeah, I guess there really is something for me to look at. And I tried really hard in writing about this case. I knew two of the men that were involved that night, and I know them to be good men who care. And I came to know that Milo's family was like most of the people I encountered in my community, the place I love. Good people who care about their children and invest themselves in trying to build community. And the family, Milo's family, trusted me the same way the police had trusted me. And, you know, the cops had let me go out with them early on in my career and learn what it meant. They basically maneuvered me into a situation in a bar where, and I know they did it on purpose because that's what cops do. They got me in a bar with a bunch of people who was about ready to kick my ass, and because they thought I was a cop. We went in under, you know, plainclothes guys, and they're making an arrest, and there were two detectives and me and 40 angry guys with pool cues and bottles. And just when I thought I was about ready to get stomped, six guys in uniforms came in the door, and I wrote about that at the time, and I wrote about it again in the series. You know, backup was the most beautiful word in the English language. I get it. You know, it's a scary job. It's hard. And you know, and people fly-spec it, and that's part of my job is to fly-spec. Milo's family taught me about themselves the same way. And a big part of it was Donna Cooper. People in Tulalip, over time, and it took time to really watch this story unfold, taught me about why they revere elders. And, you know, they look at a child and they see the future, and that's going to be a young man. That's going to be somebody late in life that will be somebody who's a keeper of stories like Donna was. And they teach them to be storytellers, and that was really apparent in watching how they raised them, their kids up. Donna taught a lot just by being silent. You know, she'd say something and just leave it hang in the air. And it took a while for me to figure out, well, don't fill the air with sound. Just think about that. And the story, I wrote about things as this case moved forward into a federal civil rights lawsuit and then a settlement. And I kept thinking, as I was writing, I'd write things, daily stories, and I was still doing, I knew I'd be writing something bigger, gathering those scenes and writing those events so that they wouldn't perish. I kept thinking, if I'm going to write this story the way I need to write it, I need to tell people about myself, that I'm been invited to participate and learn from these people, the Tulalips. I was invited to participate and learn from the police. And this is the story of what journalists get to do. And I think, I believe it was Scheherazade earlier today who talked about the magic of connecting with the subject. And, that was part of what was at play here. And I came to see my community. And I'm a community journalist. I loved the fact that I'm a community journalist. I write about people and places that move me most. I came to see my community differently, and I felt I could show my community how I see them and sort of deflate some of the myths that they had created. And that's part of what the story was really ultimately about, was Milo's death had been turned into a morality play. And it's an easy trap that we fall into, young man on drugs, encounters the cops, he's dead, game over. The reality was Milo had been trained to be a leader in that community. Milo was somebody with a tremendous charisma. Milo had just left home 3 days before, and he was a kid whose family had invested great time and energy trying to help him make good choices, and he made a kid's choice, and he died. And there was a tremendous tragedy and loss. And I tried to capture what that meant over the course of his lifetime by reflecting on who the people were that I met. And I wrote, and it was the hardest part of the story to really write. It was the last thing I wrote, which is, what is this? How does this connect very, very directly with my family? And, I'm raising a daughter there in that community. And, I don't know how many parents there are in this room, but there is nothing scarier than basically trusting your child to the world and knowing that you can't be there to pat all the sharp edges. And that's really what happened with this family. It wasn't about ultimately the tribe. It wasn't ultimately about parental choices. It was about the reality that this membrane, and I'm stealing from Kevin McKiernan, a friend of ours, a Dart fellow who just had a sort of a bad thing happen in his family, but he's talking about how thin the membrane is between what we hope and what can happen, and that's what happened, and that was the story. And I think it's a story that, I'm only going to get to tell it once, and I'm glad that I decided to tell it this way, and it resonated with my community, and it meant a lot to Milo's family. And when I told them that I was going to be coming here to talk about the story, they're all very moved by that. And, like Moni, I too, because I was writing about what was happening in their hearts, and I wanted to make sure that I was understanding, really understood the lessons that they were trying to teach me. I ended up reading the entire series to the family, it was fact-checking, and I think that's really important in a story like this. You got to make sure you understood that it's not just you interpreting. And, there was another reason I read the story, is that during the course of doing this story, Donna Cooper, she lost her eyesight. And so it was really important for me to sit with her in her kitchen. And she had summoned all of her children, except for Nyla, and they all sat and they listened and they said nothing. And at the end, she said, you kept your word to us. You told the truth. That's all they asked, was that I tell the truth. That's it.